Welcome to another episode of Uncensored with Penny Faree.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Uncensored. Today's show is going to be about the air we're breathing on the North Coast. We know that the air is dangerous, and we know this because private data from the civic organization Communities Against Pollution is telling us what government won't. In Kwadukuza and in KwaZulu-Natal, more than 80% of government air monitors haven't worked in years. In Kwadukuza, there is no official data at all. Without working monitors, there's no enforcement, no accountability, and no way to hold polluters responsible. But while government systems have collapsed, this non-profit has in the past 3 years installed more than 15 private monitors to track the air we breathe, and the findings are alarming. Today on Uncensored, we speak to the founder of Communities Against Pollution, Paolo Del Fabbro, and ask what it takes to fight for the right to clean air. Paolo, welcome to the show.
Thank you. A huge topic for our community. Yeah. And let's see if I can answer some of your questions.
Yeah. Well, political parties and the media have recently sounded the alarm about air monitoring failures over the past 2 years. The reality is far worse and has been unfolding for over a decade. Now, as far back as 2010, Itakwini came under fire because its air quality stations had become non-operational due to neglected maintenance and a severe shortage of skilled staff across all three tiers of government. Then in 2011, the South Durban Community Environmental Alliance publicly raised concerns about the collapse of air monitoring infrastructure in KwaZulu-Natal. And according to the civic group, air officers hadn't reported any data since 2013. The air stations had fallen into disrepair due to lack of municipal funding and maintenance. Now, Paolo, let's start at the beginning. It was exactly this lack of inaction and the absence of reliable government data that have left communities in the dark about the air we breathe and ultimately led to you starting Communities Against Pollution. So in the absence of government oversight, how critical is the role of your civic organization and what challenges have you faced in doing this work?
Well, it was your articles in 2020 that made us look for solutions.
Yeah.
And the only way out we saw was to own the problem.
Yeah.
We can't wait for government. If you take, for example, the 24-25 budget,
yeah,
0.38% of the total budget has been allocated to environment.
Yeah. So that's what we're saying. There is no data. And obviously, without any data, there is no accountability. So what we are looking at now is how critical the problem is.
Well, the advantage that we have is that we have now placed, just in the Ilembe district,
yeah,
15 monitors.
Okay.
Some of these monitors have been in the ground since December 21, and we started our community science project with data from March 23.
Yeah.
We are now in the second year of continuous data with millions of data points, which we analyze on a monthly basis.
Okay. So when you look at the data now, just from our region, the air quality has edged quite a bit into dangerous territory, and yet there's no warning, there's no public alerts, and you've mentioned that your monitors are on the ground. And based on these readings, what are we seeing? How bad is the air quality?
The trend is showing.
Yeah.
So we established a baseline for 23, and the last year's monitor data showed air worse than the previous year.
Yeah.
We had 16 exceedances, or four times the accepted levels of the national standards. There is no denying there's a problem.
Yeah, so there is a problem. You know, I just want to, just as an antidote, a few weeks ago, I went onto the air quality. It was a Friday night and my eyes were burning, and I logged onto your website, the CAPS website, where you can actually look at the live readings, and they were on purple. It was almost purple. Is that correct? It's like almost, it was a health hazard. And I was so concerned in terms of my kids were also battling to breathe that I actually called the fire station. I called the station. It took me a while. Finally got to someone to speak to, and then I asked them if there were any burns happening because the air quality was so bad, and obviously he said nothing. And now I've noticed in the last couple of months with the informal settlements, there are burns happening because we don't have the waste services. So what do the people do with their waste? They burn it. And have you picked this up with some of the air monitors?
Yes, we have a monitor located adjacent to one of the informal settlements, and it regularly shows readings in red, which is unhealthy, and purple, which is very unhealthy. And these are international standards, and if you tried to find a SAQIS, which is the South African Air Quality Information Services, they would tell you the air is good.
Yeah.
Total misrepresentation of what is happening on the ground.
So the world standards tell you that, we'll take that example when you spoke to me, 68 is considered dangerous. Yet, according to the South African Air Quality Information System, they consider 68 good.
As good. It's, the SAQIS is just a misinformation service, I'm sorry to say. In 2023, we had an opportunity to report to the Special Reporter on Toxics and Human Rights.
In the United Nations.
The United Nations, that's correct.
Yeah.
And we highlighted the failures of SAQIS.
Yeah, it's the failures of a government technically, because this is what concerned me. I was at home. The air that I was breathing had a clear effect on my health and my family's health, yet there was no one to talk to, no one to call. There was no action that could be taken, and there were to enforce anything. So the polluters can't be held accountable, because you've also raised that we have no active bylaws or active laws in our region that can protect the community against dangerous air quality levels. Is that correct?
Not 100%.
Yeah.
We have very strong laws. We have good bylaws.
Yeah.
The Kwadakuza nuisance bylaw, Section 31, says you shall not burn other than for cooking. It's
okay.
There.
So there are bylaws.
There's no willingness to enforce.
Okay, well, that's the story of our local government.
If I can give you an example, we videoed a burn. We gave a geolocation. We reported it to Kwadakuza. For 3 days, total inaction. Finally, they went out, and on our follow-up, we said, well, what did you do? We didn't do anything. He's a nice guy. Unacceptable.
Yeah, gosh. You know, when you're dealing with this, and I know that they do have a department at Ilembe that, you know, that employs people to do this type of work on the ground, yet there is literally crickets from that department. When you did say that back in 2019, I did a report for our local newspaper that there was a air monitor that had been installed at the Enterprise Ilembe grounds to monitor the Belito air quality. And this had come, this was a result of the constant, you know, complaints that the Belito residents were putting forward on a lot of the social WhatsApp groups and Facebook groups about the quality of air, complaining that the sugarcane burning was impacting people's health. They were obviously, you know, zoning in on that. And as a result of that, an air quality monitor was installed at Enterprise Ilembe. I waited a few months. We did the whole fanfare, you know, there was a big publicity about it. Everyone was very excited because now we could see what the air quality actually was based on proper data. And then after a few months, you know, when I approached Ilembe asking for data, they said, no, they need results to be able to configure that, and I could understand. And then after a year, still nothing, did an application to look at the data. And then finally got in touch with the fire officer then, who has sadly passed away. And he said that air monitor was never properly calibrated. There was no data from the beginning that had cost a lot of money no data had been captured because it hadn't calibrated the product properly, and then it had become obsolete. So even after it was properly calibrated, there were no people then, they said, to read the monitor. So, you know, that was the, you know, the one chance to do proper data, because your air monitors are showing that we have a problem. But then what? Okay, we can see now there's a problem. Everyone is talking about it. But then what happens? What is a next step from here?
Once we have 3 years worth of data, yeah, we will be pushing our master plan and challenging government on addressing issues.
Yeah.
The problem with the air quality is compounded by the strong inversion layers that we have in winter. The emissions that we see in our area come from traffic. The N2 plays a substantial role. They come from the illegal burning from the informal settlements,
which have sprouted around the area, yeah, in the last two, 3 years.
They come from industry.
Yeah.
And a large and major contributor is sugarcane burning.
Yeah.
If you look on the NASA website, which I've shown you,
yeah,
you will be shocked by the number of fires that are constantly burning. You just go back and look on either today or 7 days worth. There are probably 60 to 100 fires burning at any point. All of that then gets trapped under the inversion layer and builds up until we have the next cold front or winds or rain, which then gives us some relief for a day or two.
Okay.
But the numbers are pushed definitely from yellow through to orange through to red, and 1 or 2 days where we saw purple sparks.
Yeah, and you know, also this is also compounded because it's sugarcane is a crop that's very, you know, it's sprayed a lot. So obviously, when you're burning it as well, all the toxins and insecticides and pests are also coming in there, and that is creating a big problem. Can I just quickly go back? You know, the KZN Air Quality Baseline Assessment Report that, you know, that was put forward, and I actually attended some of the Zoom meetings. You had a lot of contribution to it. That basically, after 20 years, the province finally put together a team to do a report. They paid consultants a huge amount of money to put a report on an assessment of how bad air quality is, and then possibly the consultants will collate all the information and put something together, you know, as a solution going forward, I think. So they didn't mention that Quatakusa has a licensed Class A landfill. So for listeners who might not be familiar, Class A landfill is classified as highly hazardous, meaning it accepts waste that poses the highest risk to human health and environment. Now, this particular site is the largest of its kind in the entire Southern Hemisphere. Now, many residents in Stanger believe government showed poor judgment in approving the conversion of the general landfill license to a Class A highly hazardous one, especially given its location. And you've said that it's there are 43 schools around that landfill site. From your perspective, what is the biggest challenge in managing air quality around such a site?
Okay, always always a bit of controversy thrown in.
Yeah.
CAP actually sits on the two monitoring committees of that site. We meet regularly, biannually, on the two committees, so we meet 4 times a year. From our inside perspective, we believe that the company is doing everything in its power to reduce emissions. However, by its very nature, it emits.
Yeah.
And the company does not deny that, but they've put in mitigation measures. I know that last year they finally commissioned a 20 million rand processing plant to reduce emissions. However, if you read the local social media, you'll see that in the last couple of months they've had huge problems.
Yeah.
I can't address that because I was out of the country for a while. But I suggest that if you contact some of the Stanger residents or the Princess Grant residents, you will be able to get a fuller picture of what's happening.
Yeah, and it is. It's, you know, we've got the sugar cane, we've got the landfill sites, we've got illegal burning from informal settlements, and we also have illegal landfill sites that are also operating in our area. You know, we the DOCRA Environmental Subcommittee identified three. The committee did a lot of good work, and we managed to close the one down, and we still have two illegal landfill sites burning as well that are also contributing. And then obviously with the collapse of PRASA, we've got more cars on the road. So it's almost like the perfect storm, and yet people aren't aware how dangerous it is and what is happening to our health. What is the next step then for the public? I mean, for me, I'm aware of the issues and how bad the levels are because I sit on these subcommittees. I listen to a lot of your material that you put out, a lot of your, you know, your information is very critical. What is an independent community-driven body? And we're looking at the picture of the air quality, which the government has failed, you know, to protect the communities. What needs to happen practically and politically to turn this crisis around? And how can ordinary citizens help push that forward?
I think we all have to start having this difficult conversation. We live in an environment where there are multifaceted businesses, and the perception is that it's an all-or-nothing situation. There are many international examples of how our problems have been addressed.
Yeah.
Brazil, for example, in 2018, passed legislation for no burn in sugarcane. Brazil still produces 40% of the world's sugar. So it's not stop sugar.
Yeah.
It's just farm it differently.
Yeah.
That's the conversation we need to have. And it's a collaborative situation. It's not, as I say, it's not a all or nothing situation. Sugarcane is a major contributor to our economy. It is a easy entry for black farmers.
Yeah,
and it employs thousands and thousands of people. So we ask that community to start engaging in a constructive change.
Yeah, that is so important. You know, Paolo, has government reached out to you? You know, you've got live monitors on the ground. Have they possibly looked at collaborating, seeing as they can't put the monitors, they can't make them work? Is there a possibility that it could become a public-private partnership?
We have reached out to government and have shown through our collaboration with the Richards Bay Clean Air Association that's been running for 20 years and has placed six of their monitors in the SACWA system, probably the only six that are working in Natal.
Yeah, I think that is the one.
And we have co-located with every one of their units one of our monitors so that they can be calibrated and shown to be as good as the larger monitors, obviously for reference purposes and not legal purposes. But the point is that they will show accurate data.
Yeah.
Our particle matter correlation, which has been tested by the University of Cambridge, shows a correlation of 0.94 for PM for particle matter and 0.97 for CO2. So our 5,000 Rand monitors are pretty much equal to the 200,000 Rand government monitors.
Yeah, which don't work.
Which don't work.
Yeah. So if we got more air monitors on the ground, would we be able to geolocate industries that are actually operating and breaking the law and not being held accountable because they feel they can get away with it, so they can do what they want? Would we be able to, like, just say, go back to the example of that Friday night, if we had enough air monitors on the ground, would we have been able to see where the source of, you know, that pollution was coming from?
Well, I can go one step further than that. That Friday night was definitely the informal settlement.
Okay.
The monitor has been placed, as I said, adjacent to it, And whenever I see those spikes, I communicate with the household and ask, is it your emission or is it burning? And they just have to look over the fence and they can see the burn.
Yeah.
So every one of those spikes is largely confirmed.
Okay.
As visual and by the monitor. So triangulating industry should become easier. Every time we are an interested and affected party with applications that go out, the request that we put to the company, whether it's a new site or whether it's an existing site that wants some of their readings amended, we ask of that company to buy a minimum of two monitors, which are placed, or three monitors, one on site and one northeast and one southwest, which are the prevailing winds. So the more monitors we put into the ground, the more we'll be able to identify exactly okay. who the problem is.
And I think I think the next step forward as we wrap this up is the entire process of accountability. You know, our government systems have once again failed our communities. And, you know, with communities against pollution, you providing a vital surface in the work you're doing and doing monitoring air quality, raising awareness where the government's systems have failed. So it's up to all of us to stay informed and engaged and hold those in power accountable. And I think only through collective action and support for community initiatives like CAP will we see the change we want. And that is the key note here. Is that not right?
Yeah, I think we just need to remember the words of Nelson Mandela, which was the theme of this year. It's in your hands to create a better world for all who live in it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the takeaway. Pointing fingers and all the rest of it is not going to help anyone. We need to sit down, we need to find solutions, and we need to do it jointly.
Yeah.
It cannot be left to a single organization or a single person. We are all involved, we are all affected.
Yeah, and that's so important. And, you know, as a community, we do have a strong community on the North Coast. A lot of people get involved. So we're going to keep this conversation going and the pressure on. And until we see some action on the ground from government to address this problem, we're going to be keeping, you know, everyone informed and pressing it on. Thank you for joining me, Paolo. It's been very, very informative.
Thank you.
Uncensored with Penny Faree is brought to you proudly by IPSS Electronic Security. When it comes to security, don't leave it to chance. Trust the experts at IPSS Security as the only CISA-approved security provider on the Dolphin Coast in all categories and the only local security company also accredited for CCTV off-site monitoring. With over 4 million rand invested in AI technology, they protect over 35 upmarket residential estates, spotting threats in real time. If action is needed, their rapid response and tactical teams, backed by the largest fleet in the region, is ready to act. For unmatched security, contact IPSS Security today at 0861 324 777. Your safety is their priority.